Now we're very happy to have our talks that are scheduled. As you see, the first brother to speak to us now is Brother Paul O'Malley, and he has a very interesting subject to discuss with us, the celestial city. Brother Paul.
The celestial city is one of the great hopes of the future. Our hope. It's spoken of as the New Jerusalem coming down from heaven. And friends, as we talk about these things, try to capture the picture in your minds. It's a vision. And that's where the vision should be. It shouldn't be words in a book. That's one of the difficulties I have when I read visions. Remember Peter when he saw the vision of the sheep coming down with the animals? Well, if you just read them as words, but picture a sheep coming down with animals and Peter looking at it and I'm looking over Peter's shoulder. I think that'll make things a lot more in terms of what the person was looking at, as in this case, it was John the Revelator. He was seeing this vision. The celestial city. The heavenly inheritance of the church. You know, in the scriptures, there are two cities that are vividly defined and described. The first city is the city of Babylon, Revelation 18:21. That's a city that's impious, unholy, confused, the city of the adversary. Then there is this other city, the city of Jerusalem, Revelation 21:2. A city that's pious and holy and peaceful, the city of the Christ. Babylon is temporary. Earthly, a first and second dispensation control of the earth. Jerusalem is a spiritual city, a third dispensation of the control of the earth. I make no apologies for my obsession with celestial matters. I'm fascinated with the stars and with the galaxies and the universe and the heavens. I study them often. I can't stop thinking about them. It dominates my meditation and my outlook. After all, it's my future home. Is it yours? Are you more interested in your local areas than where you're heading? I expect to spend more time in the celestial city than I do in New London, Connecticut. But my real reason for my obsession with a heavenly home is that God lives there. God dwells there. His being, his person. His face, his totality is there. I'm captivated with anything about God. From Revelation 21, John says, "And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God." You know, nominal believers hold a view that the celestial city is heaven itself. And they are strongly convinced, talk to them and they'll tell you, that when they die, they will go to this city. In fact, that's one of the ways they convert people. They say, you come into our religious fold and you're going to heaven. You know, it reminds me of a minister in the East, one Sunday morning, in his sermon, asked his congregation, "Is there anyone here who expects to go to heaven when they die? Please stand." Well, they all stood up. And then he took a shotgun and he pointed it to them. What do you think happened? They all sat down. Rather interesting. Many want to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die to get there. But note, the celestial city comes out of heaven, comes down to earth, comes down from God. It can't be heaven if it comes out of heaven, can it? I think this is a very important clarification, even among some brethren, because we've had some discussions. It can't be heaven if it comes out of heaven. Of course, you want to argue it's a piece of heaven. But it comes out of heaven. And there are five applications of the Hebrew word for heaven. Shamayim. Shamayim, Strong's 8064. It applies to the physical heavens, referring to our atmosphere. The third heavens of Paul, referring to the third dispensation of human history. The starry heavens, where God's glory is manifest. The spiritual heavens, where God dwells. And the ecclesiastical heavens, which is the spiritual and administrative control of earth. There are five applications of that Hebrew word. The celestial city, the New Jerusalem, that comes out of God's heaven is Christ's government, and I'm using the word Christ here now, head and body, Jesus and the church. Christ's government, which replaces the ecclesiastical heaven of the God of this world. The celestial city is the same third heaven that Paul saw as a third dispensation of human history. That's in 2 Corinthians 12, 2-4. Now let's take a look at some details of the celestial city, the New Jerusalem. First, as we emphasize, it's coming down from heaven to replace something. And we would suggest to you to replace the ecclesiastical heavens that are already here, already in control, already dominating, occupied by Satan and the fallen ones. It has nothing to do with God's residence. This means Satan's control, Satan's dominion, and the New Jerusalem comes in and replaces it. Peter refers to the removal of the adversary's heavens as heavens that will pass away with a great noise. Heavens that will melt with fervent heat. Well, that can't be God's heaven that's going to be melting with fervent heat. So it's got to be the ecclesiastical heavens, those elements that have controlled this world. It is a new spiritual ruling power of earth. The celestial city, then, is a new government to be set up as a kingdom on earth. City in biblical symbols means government. When we think of the New Jerusalem, we are talking about a new government. Incidentally, when we speak of the heavens of Satan, have you ever thought where it is? Where do you think it is? You must have some notion. Is it a satellite revolving around the earth? Is it a flying saucer? Is it within the core of earth? You know, I think, speaking of monasteries yesterday, I'm sure the monks raised that question. Where is it? They had to put it somewhere. Or your logical mind would want to put it somewhere. Where is it? So they stuck it in the core of the earth. And that's where the fire got started, you see. So, but where would we suggest it be? Is it in the faraway galaxy? In a separate colony? Where is the ecclesiastical heavens wherein Satan's organization dwells? 2 Peter 2:4 makes a suggestion where it is. It is in Tartarus. Tartarus, that Greek word that says the earth's atmosphere and among the people, but with chains of darkness. Chaining means straight restraints from excess to God's throne. Restraints from materializing. Restraints from enjoying God's light, because they're not allowed to go to heaven either. So the ecclesiasticals are located right here on earth in the atmosphere. Where's the atmosphere? From zero level up to, how many miles do you put the atmosphere? A suggestion, friends. Incidentally, where do you think the guardian angels are? Now, we got a lot of guardian angels that must have come to this convention. Do you believe you have a guardian angel? I do. Where are they? Are they in this room? Well, it's rather interesting. Jacob stumbled on one of their camps in Genesis 32, 1-2. There must be hundreds of these camps on earth, because we have many of the large brethren, large people here, many of the brethren. And therefore, they come to conventions with us. Not sure exactly what their activities are. Maybe they're outside fellowshipping with one another. Friends, we're making these suggestions, but that's real. Those are real things. You know, when we come to a point where our beliefs are real and we live it, then we have moved into spirit-mindedness that we are speaking of. I think our speaker previously saying that we're going to see things in the holy with that light like nobody else has seen. There's a second point we want to make. The celestial city will replace all the multifarious spiritual agencies that have sprung up upon mankind to serve mankind. And over 6,000 years, wow, we've had churches and temples and idols and cathedrals and tabernacles and meeting halls and sanctuaries and synagogues, all kinds of places of worship. And I try to get an estimate, how many of these things will be wiped out? We're talking millions and millions of things that will be wiped out. The celestial city will be a single new spiritual agency to serve mankind. For the celestial city is the new tabernacle for humans. There's a third point. The celestial city has a structured appearance. There's an architecture to it. Now, you can interpret Revelation in at least three ways. You could say the celestial city is all literal. You could say it's all symbolic. Or you could say that it's part literal and part symbolic. I'm going to let you make your choice. But let's take each choice. The first choice, in terms of its architectural configuration, is that the celestial city appears to be an equilateral cube. I'm going to just move off to the blackboard here. I can't talk. You tell me I can't talk when I'm at the blackboard, because they won't pick it up over there. So I'm going to just put a sketch on the board. So the first choice you have is that it's an equilateral cube. And this has been suggested in the seventh volume, with 12 edges representing the foundations of the 12 apostles. And this suggestion is coming from the most holy of the tabernacle, which is in the shape of a cube. All edges are squared off at 90 degrees, suggesting perfection. Perfection in organization, perfection in unity, and perfection in mission. And the sides are 12,000 furlongs on each. It's being equilateral, they're all equal. You have a second choice. The celestial city could be a quadrangular pyramid. If you'll note 21:16, it says that the city measures 4 square where the length is equal to the breadth and equal to the height. Those are the only dimensions. Breadth, length, and height. And a quadrangular pyramid meets those criteria. So you get a second choice. And it has 12 edges as well. There are several reasons for suggesting a quadrangular pyramid, because at the peak of the quadrangular pyramid, there's a small pyramid. And this is the scriptural reference to Jesus as the cornerstone, building with a foundation at the top. It means that Jesus was built first, 1 Peter 2:6. Also, it means that he is held upward. Most buildings are built downward for gravity toward the earth. But this Jesus is anchored to the heavens. He is pointed to the heavens. He is pointed to God's throne and not to earth. Second reason, the base formed as an equilateral, all sides equal, represents the 4 attributes of God. East wall, justice, west wall, power, south wall, love, and the north wall, wisdom. In a cube, it's very hard to identify where these chief cornerstones and these bases might be. Because in a cube, you can turn them any which way and you can get the same thing. In a quadrangular pyramid, the 4 sides are easily identified and they do represent the attributes of God. Now you have a third choice as we talk about the architectural features. And that is to combine Ezekiel's temple with John's New Jerusalem city. After all, we're speaking of Earth's new government. Where do you put Ezekiel's temple? I'm sure there many of you have raised those kinds of questions. What's the connection between the two? Some of you might say, they're 2 separate pictures. Don't try to connect them. Well, let me make some suggestions to you. Because if you remember, Ezekiel's temple, from the 40th chapter on to the 48th chapter, it is a vision of God's temple. And it depicts God's kingdom on earth, both the political, the economic, the civil, and the human, the social, but not the spiritual. John's holy city is the spiritual, and thus a third choice you have is to put the two architects together. I'm not going to draw them. To put the two architects together and locate them near or in Jerusalem. Ezekiel 47:13-21 tends to imply that. Ezekiel's temple then is the earthly, visible view of Christ's government, and John's New Jerusalem is the spiritual, invisible view of Christ's government. Together they represent Christ's government on earth. Now, some brethren have taken both visions as completely symbolic. If you're one of these, then your view of mankind will never see its government. Question might be raised, what good is it to have a temple if mankind can never see it? You got to remember, mankind is still human. They got to see something, or is your view that they won't see anything. Now, if you take the view that it's all completely literal, and then your view is that Jesus and the church is no longer spiritual, mankind will see the immortal ones. And that don't make sense either, does it? So the third choice tends to suggest that they're combined, but the Ezekiel temple is the earthly perception or view, and the New Jerusalem is the spiritual part of God's or Christ's government. Now, this third choice arrangement is very similar to the interface arrangement. I believe you now about mini talk. I just got started. Well, Mary told me I've got enough here for 4 hours. Let me say, friends, that we're trying to suggest that architecturally there is a connection. And I will just give you this one text, which is, in my opinion, very important. Ezekiel 48:30-35, because there is a correlation between the two, and that's the gates. The names over the gates, but they have the same names, both in the spiritual and in the earthly. And we would suggest to you that's the interface between the spiritual and the earthly. And we would suggest to you those gates are the ancient worthies, where they tie together between the two in a very real, practical sense of government. There are many functions that we could say about Ezekiel's temple. And many things that it's expected to do, such as being a tabernacle, such as resurrecting all of mankind, such as reconciling, such as a new management. I really think we have to think in practical terms. This will be the government. Now, I don't like to say, well, look at governments we have today, and that'll give you an idea, because there's no illustration there. But I think you understand the functions of government. The functions of government is to lay down the laws, and I mean very practically, in how we live and how we will conduct our affairs, how we will be instructed, the kinds of things, very practical kinds of things. And these two connections here are very important. Most important aspect of the celestial city, why I'm going there, is because it's a reunion. We're going to see people that we've been studying. I can't wait to meet the Apostle Paul. I want to thank him for being such an inspiration to me. I can't wait to meet Cornelius, my Italian counterpart. I want to thank him for being the first Gentile convert. I can't wait to talk to Aaron. I want to ask him, how did the Urim and the Thummim really work? You know, friends, as I think of years and years into the future, I see reunion lasting. Oh, all those questions, all those nebula. We're going to straighten out how many ornaments were there on the candle stand. What a grand time our reunion will be. Let me leave with you a parable about the celestial city. Once a man dreamed of a ladder that reached from earth to the celestial city. He saw many angels ascending and descending this ladder. He saw many people from earth going up to this ladder, or going up the ladder into the city. He was even surprised to see his friends ascend the ladder. And then he was overjoyed to see himself climb the ladder in his dream. But in his dream, he noticed that as he climbed, he looked out and saw all kinds of things. He saw the beautiful earth. He saw the flowers and the atmospheres and the trees. He was captivated by the atmosphere, the green valleys and the beautiful trees. So that slowed him up. Then as he continued to climb, he's seeing this in his dream, as he continued, he noticed that as he got to the ionosphere, he saw the earth and the blue sky and the clouds. This was beautiful. That slowed him up too. But as he continued to climb the ladder, he finally came to a point where the starry heavens came into view. There he stopped, and he gazed, and he gazed, and he stared. This was a captivating view, because after all, here is the universe all before him. But as he stared, in his dream, there was a clap of thunder, a bolt of lightning, and the ladder started to collapse. And he was on the ladder. It collapsed and it fell to earth. He woke up from his dream, shaking, broken, sweating, disappointed. For in his dream, the ladder from earth to the celestial city no longer existed. For in his dream, he didn't make it. For in his dream, his tarrying, his slowing down, his preoccupation with the natural and the earthly did not permit him to achieve. And then he reflected, and he thought about it, sitting on the bed after his dream. When will we ever learn we've been given a ladder to reach the celestial city? We must seize the opportunity. He thought, when will we ever learn we must climb the ladder in haste, as one day it will collapse? When will we ever learn we must climb the ladder and not be distracted with the earthly views? And he thought, when will we ever learn we must climb the ladder with a singleness of purpose or lose forever a glorious prospect? When will we ever learn?